Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to Around the 412. We are part of the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. I am Tyler, and with me as always is my co-host, Smitty. You know, I talked last week about having a tie Monday, and honestly, I think I'd rather have that right now because today is a loss Monday, not a victory Monday like it looked like it could be towards the end of that game against the Chargers last night. But anyway, how's your day going, man? What's going on?
What do we call this? I think I need a margarita Monday or something.
Margarita Monday?
Yeah. It
needs Misery to be Monday?
Misery Monday could work as well. Yeah, let us know what you guys think we should start calling Mondays after a loss. You know what really sucks about this, though, is the entire division besides us won.
Wasn't the prettiest of fashion for Baltimore and Cleveland. The worst case scenario for the Steelers on Sunday. Yeah.
Well, you know what, too? I mean, you just mentioned, I don't want to keep harping on a past result, like the game's over and done with, but like I wouldn't feel this bad about this game, especially considering they were missing three key pieces on the defensive side, had they not tied with the Lions. Like, that just makes this so much worse, I feel like, seeing that one in that tie column.
Yeah, I get the one is better than a loss, and I understand, yeah. Like, yeah, you were missing Ben in that game. So with Mason Rudolph, what can you expect? I guess a loss or a tie is a better than a loss, but yeah, it's just frustrating. And I feel like for this game, specifically this game, I'm in a similar scenario where because of the result of the game and how the game ended up playing out, like going into the fourth quarter, the Steelers were losing 27-10. I feel like if they would have lost, like whatever it would have been, like 34-17, or like not make a ton of like much of a comeback, I would have been more complacent with this loss. But having the Steelers come back and tie and then take the lead and then lose that lead, it's just, I feel like it's a much more somber feeling than I would have had if they would have just lost and it would have been like an outright loss. It wasn't even close.
Yeah, we don't want to dive into specifics until the second segment of the show. We'll talk about, you know, what really led to this loss, you know, other than the obvious, the fact that T.J. Watt, Minkah Fitzpatrick and Joe Hayden were not available to the team. But what I will say, well, first off, hey, man, shout out to the fans, though. You know, 2/3 of that stadium were Steeler fans. It's crazy to see the way that they not just like people always say travel, but like that's just Steeler fans that are rooted in that area. Now, they're not traveling very far. Oh, yeah. A lot of them. I mean, that's just how Steeler fans are. You know, they're spread out everywhere. But shout out to them showing up, making SoFi, open up SoFi for the first time as Steeler fans, the new home away from home. Looks like it was a great experience for everybody out there. Juju was actually at the tailgate that like I would normally be at with all those people.
Oh, really?
People.
That's pretty cool.
Shout out to him. Yeah, he did like a pop-up shop or something there. Nice. So, but yeah, shout out to the fans for that. But also, I want to like – it's just figures, right? That the offense has their best game when the defense is just so depleted that it doesn't matter. They couldn't have stopped. They wouldn't have stopped anybody tonight.
Yeah. First time that the offense have scored 30 points this year. And they ended up getting 37. And in the NFL, if you score 37 points in an offense, you should win the game, except when your defense gives up 41. And I understand they were missing the pieces, but like, you're really testing the depth at that point, and the depth on the Steelers defense was really exposed. They did not hold up to what we hoped we would have seen from the defense. There was no answer for almost anything. They showed a little bit of pushback in that fourth quarter, but then whatever happened, happened. The Mike Williams touchdown or whatever you want to say. Like they were just constantly giving up the big plays. They never really made a ton of stops.
They turned back the clock and looked like the 2016 Steelers defense, maybe even a little bit worse, because at least those what carried all these defenses really has been the pass rush. And when you don't have a guy like TJ Watt to provide that pass rush. And also, why did it take so long for them to move Alex Highsmith to the other side to get him away from Rashawn Slater? I was saying it the entire time, like Taco Charlton isn't winning his one-on-ones regardless of who he's going against. Like, get Highsmith away from Slater, and that's the only shot you have of generating pass rush, and it ended up happening. But I don't know why it took so long. Anyways, the only reason that they were able to get back into this game is, one, shout out to Miles Killebrew, who for some reason you can't vote for the Pro Bowl as a special teams player, but that's his second blocked punt now. Almost had a touchdown, but he kicked the ball out of his own hands trying to pick it up.
He was falling off balance, so I'll give him the better of the doubt.
And Danny Smith for dialing that up, too. But, yeah, that's Killebrew's second block punt. And then Cam Hayward being Cam Hayward, you know, in a very bad situation with what the defense looked like right now for this game. I mean, another tip pass that's a sixth of the year turns into a Cam Sutton interception. They should have gotten the free 15 yards after that, after a second headshot, not just the one to Najee Harris, but the Cam Sutton as well, following that interception. But really, like just a couple splash plays were able to get the Steelers back into this game. But as a whole, the defense, they were not stopping anybody tonight. Austin Eckler, four touchdowns. We talked about Austin Eckler, by the way. Shout out to us last episode for saying that Austin Eckler was going to be the issue for this defense. I had a feeling, you know, even sans Minka Fitzpatrick, that the emphasis of this defense was going to be making sure that they didn't get the top taken off of it by a guy like Mike Williams or like Keenan Allen with his route running. It's going to be Austin Eckler that's going to win this game for the Chargers. Unfortunately, we actually were right for once.
We were right, but the other two things you said, the route running of Keenan Allen and taking the top off of Mike Williams, those also happened within that game. Well, there was a lot of things that went wrong.
Yeah, Mike Williams, what did he – that was a 53-yard touchdown at the end. So what did he finish with?
He finished with 5 for 97.
Okay, so I held him relatively in check prior to that. Keenan Allen did have – he had like
– 9 for 112.
Yeah, and I – again, you know, we're going to talk about Devin Bush actually as we transition to the second segment here. But, like, him on Austin Eckler was bound to be horrible regardless. I don't care if we're getting Devin Bush before – the ACL injury, that's a mismatch, and the Chargers were going to expose that regardless.
That's the second time that the Steelers have had a mismatch against a skill position against the Chargers on a linebacker whenever Vince Williams in Heinz Field was covering Keenan Allen. LJ Fort, too.
Yeah. He's probably both of them. I remember a lot of LJ Fort in that game, though, but yeah.
Basically the same thing. You're having a speedy skill position and the middle linebacker just cannot keep up, but the Steelers never adjusted.
Yeah. Fun times. The Steelers do fall to the Chargers 41-37 at SoFi Stadium on Sunday Night Football, leading to Misery Monday, whatever you want to call it. Misery Monday. Yeah. So let us know in the comments what you're calling today. Let us know in the comments as well how you're feeling about the team right now. Do you have a little bit of optimism because of what you saw from the offense and just thinking the defense just needs to get these three guys back? Or are you just, man, the depth of this team is so bad, knowing that they're going to be tested at times, and this is the performance that you get? Let us know in the comments what you think. We will be right back to talk more about this game, dive into some specifics as far as players go, the overall performance of the team. I really want to talk about – I know you're chomping at the bit to talk about Devin Bush and the defense. I want to talk about Ben Roethlisberger and the offense. We're going to talk about all that, but we will be right back. This is Around the 412 on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
And welcome back to Around the 412 on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. I am Smitty. That is Tyler. Let's talk some specifics. Now, following this Steelers loss to the Los Angeles Chargers out in SoFi Stadium on Sunday Night Football, we are reliving it here on Misery Monday. That's what we're going to call it, at least for this episode. If you guys have any better suggestions, please put them in the comments, as we stated. What side of the ball do you want to start with?
Since the defense is really what cost them the game, I figure we should just start there.
I'm wearing Joe Green jersey, so perfect.
Yeah, you mentioned before the show that they could have used him. I fully agree. They were missing TJ Watt, Micah Fitzpatrick, and Joe Hayden this week. And even though they were missing those players, you thought that you might get a little bit of more plays from the defense. At least you would hope so. And you got none. And I'm going to start with, we mentioned it before, Devin Bush. I mentioned it last week's show that this is a guy that was starting to look like, okay, you should not have made the trade to trade up for him when you did in the draft. It's not like panning out. And this is just adding on to that argument even more. He looked terrible in last night's game. And I don't understand what is wrong with him. If the ACL injury made him that much of a different player so much. I mean, I thought ACL injuries, you play better after you have them now. That's what I've been told today. But I just feel like he is not the same player, especially side to side. We heard how fast he was from sideline to sideline. Well, covering Austin Eckler, he was getting burnt all the time in last night's game. And I just think the linebackers as a whole are an issue on this defense, but him specifically. And it doesn't help that he was drafted at number 10 and he can't control that himself. But him specifically has been playing terrible, not just this game, but the entire season.
Yeah, I think the thing with him, it's gotten from the point of, you know, it was going to be hard for them to ever win that trade. When you trade up into the top 10 for a guy, that guy's got to be like very good. And he was drafted to replace Ryan Shazier. Very tough spot to be put into, you know, to try to live up to that. But he's gone from being a guy that maybe you should have traded up into the top 10 to should this guy have been a first rounder to should this guy be playing over Robert Spillane right now? I mean, you know, post ACL injury, he just doesn't look like he belongs. And it's not all on Devin Bush. And we talked about this, Eddie and I did last night while we were talking about the game, our live Q&A following the game. But he, I think, is probably the person that is missing Oluwalu and Tuitt the most, because he's a pretty small guy for a linebacker, right? I mean, we're talking about him being a sideline-to-sideline guy in college, a downhill thumper. Like, he relies on his athleticism more than anything. He's not going to be able to take on these blocks and shed them. If offensive linemen are getting and climbing to the second level, beating their first guy, getting to Devin Bush and getting their hands on him, Devin Bush is not breaking off of that guy to make a play. Now, a lot of it, to me, it looks like he's kind of sitting back waiting for that contact to happen a lot of the times. So that's obviously on Devin, you know, not on the defensive lineman. But the fact that these guys are climbing to the second level with ease is where I'm saying it's not all on Bush. However, yeah, he has not been good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to absolve him of blame by any means. I just think he's probably the person that's missing those two guys the most.
Yeah, and I think in the run game, that's definitely true. I think that the loss of Oluwalu has been huge for the linebackers. But to me, in the passing games, I heard about like how quick this guy was. And maybe the ACL was that big of an injury for him that it really slowed him down. I just don't see the quickness anymore. And I understand that Austin Eckler is a very athletic guy. He's a stud. But he looked like a bum trying to cover Austin Eckler. It just looked very slow. He couldn't keep up. And the athleticism that we've talked about so much with Devin Bush just was not there. And I feel like that's where he's useful as a linebacker. And if he's not being that athletic type of linebacker, why is he out there? Like you said, like, should we be just playing Robert Spillane over him at this point? Because he might be doing better. At least Robert Spillane to me is a guy that at least in the run game, like you're talking about, is going to take on that contact and not wait for it to come to him.
Yeah.
And Devin Bush is not doing that.
Yeah, or is there another guy? Like, should Buddy Johnson or Ulysses Gilbert be getting more of an opportunity? I don't know. I'm literally asking that question. I'm not trying to say that they should. I'm not pounding the table for any of these middle linebackers right now. I haven't seen enough from a guy like Joe Schobert either coming over in that trade, although in this game he did make a really nice play on fourth down to turn the ball over. Steelers end up taking the lead there. It doesn't matter at the end, however. Really nice play from Schobert. Finally makes an impact play. But I think that just goes back to what I was trying to bring up earlier with like the coaching malpractice. Like if you see that Devin is not that, he hasn't been that guy in coverage. I think that because of his athleticism coming out, everybody just kind of assumed he would develop into a guy that's really good in pass coverage, but that hasn't been the case. And he's shown nothing to make us think that that's going to happen. So why do we keep trying to make it happen? He cannot be one-on-one with Austin Ekeler.
You know, while we're covering the defensive side of the ball, I just wanted to bring up. So we know, Brent mentioned the fact that Watt, Hayden, and Minka were out, but I think the one that I miss the most, and this might be surprising to people, is Minka Fitzpatrick. And I'm going to say that because I noticed that when it comes to Trey Norwood and Terrell Edmonds, that whenever the plays were developing, they were sitting back and waiting on the players to catch the ball. Meanwhile, Minka, I think, has the ball instincts to know what is happening and know how the play is developing, that he jumps on the plays quicker than a lot quicker than these guys did. And I think that was missed in the defense. I noticed it specifically watching those two guys, obviously because of the safeties, but they just looked like they were being very hesitant on letting the plays work out and then making a play on the ball. Meanwhile, Minka is the type of player that he can read that. He's better. He's smarter and he's better than those guys. And he knows where to go for the ball and where to make these plays. And I think that was greatly missed in the passing game because really Justin Herbert could just torch the defense like all night. Not just with his arm, though, with his legs, too. And that was another annoying part because there was literally no spy for Justin Herbert. It felt like the entire game. And I don't understand, like, Justin Herbert, I understand he is a pocket passing quarterback. Like, that is what he is. But anybody who's watched Justin Herbert play before knows that he can run, too. And it looked like the defense had no idea that that was even a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, I like, you know, it happens a couple times, okay, but like that's where the adjustments come into play in the second half for me, and it just didn't happen. As far as Minka goes, I thought that Herbert did throw the one pick after Hayward tipped it. I thought he had two or three other passes that could have been intercepted, and I know that Minka hasn't had the best turnover luck this year, but you just wonder if maybe he makes one of those plays because of the splash playability that he offers. And then for sure, that Mike Williams touchdown does not happen with Minka back there as opposed to Trey Norwood. Cam Sutton, he's playing on Williams for a little bit. He kind of hands him off in coverage and decides to bracket or decides to. I'm sure that's the way it was designed. But he kind of hands him off, and Trey Norwood's just late to react to it. And Herbert, you know, finds that along the sidelines, and Williams does what Williams has done most of the year except for the last couple of weeks by making that big play. But yeah, just a bad performance overall. I don't know what I was expecting, but I guess I still thought, you know, Cam Hayward, Alex Highsmith. I thought Alex Highsmith actually did have a good game when I said, you know, they flipped him to the other side and actually let him go to work over there as opposed to trying to have him win against a really good rookie in Slater. But beyond those two, you know, like I was Devin Bush. I thought maybe he would actually have an impact in this game. I don't know why I thought that. Joe Schobert, I thought Edmonds would maybe step up. James Pierre, Cam Sutton. I know that Cam Sutton did have that interception, but I don't know. I thought there was enough on the defensive side of the football for them to get a few stops, you know, and really the only stops they got were from the turnover and a blocked punt. So I don't know, but I do want to talk about this offense real quick, just because, like I said, it figures the offense has their best day when the defense has their worst day. Ben found a little bit of a rhythm. I wish that they wouldn't have gone completely away from the run game the way that they did. Najee did only have 12 carries. He did get knocked out with a concussion for a few drives as well late in this game. Did come back at the very end, But we'll see, you know, as far as that. I think that's something to monitor with him. But what did you think about this offensive performance? Because I feel like, again, this was just kind of like the Deontay Johnson show, who we know operates, you know, he is the passing game pretty much what they want to go through him. I actually thought, besides the what was the one play where I was like, man, like Claypool, I mean, it goes back to what I've been saying all year about Chase Claypool, is he just needs to be more physical. He just goes down too easily. I've never seen a guy that big have the worst contact balance in the world. I actually thought he was pretty decent tonight, though, in this game.
I thought you were going to talk about the one where he literally just fell down when he was by himself.
It definitely wasn't that one.
It wasn't that one. But offensively, I thought obviously they did well. They put up the 37 points, which is a season high. And listen, I might get hate for this. So many people on Twitter after the game were talking about, okay, Ben is clearly the number one quarterback. Yeah, that's obvious because the Steelers quarterback room sucks. Mason Rudolph sucks. But I'm not going to act like Ben is like all of a sudden like an all-star again. Like, he had a decent game, but I'm not going to lose my mind over this performance. I still think Ben is immobile, and I think that was noticeable not only like throughout the game, but listen, I understand that Joe Haig on that last drive was terrible, got blown up. But I feel like Ben, if he was a little younger, would be able to move a little bit out of the way. But at this stage of the game, or like in his prime or his age, he cannot do that. And I feel like that's what separates him from a guy like Tom Brady. Tom Brady knows how to move in the pocket still and is capable. I just don't think Ben's able to. So yeah, Ben's quarterback one, but only because the Steelers quarterback room sucks. Like, I'm not going to like crown this guy as like an amazing quarterback again. Anyway, moving on. I think he had a good performance though.
Yeah, I was just saying that's the really sad part about this to me is I feel like this might be the best game that we see him play this year.
Probably. Considering the offensive line up until that point in the pass protection like was tolerable, I guess. They're still not great. The whole unit is not good and they're not going to be good all year. We already know that, but my biggest frustration about this team and the offense is the play calling still. I think the play calling is just downright awful, especially in the red zone and especially when you're inside the 5-yard line. How do you have plays within the 5-yard line and you don't run the ball once? You pass it on 4 downs. I don't get it. I mean, I guess they technically ran the ball once with a Chase Claypool jet sweep, but I'm not even going to count that as a run. I'm going to count that as a pass because screw Bet Canada. I cannot stand his play calling. And I think the difference for me between what I thought Matt Canada was going to be and what he is now is that if you're going to be a good NFL offensive coordinator, I understand that Matt Canada's offense needs to have a mobile quarterback ideally to succeed. But if you're an NFL offensive coordinator, it should not matter who you have as the quarterback. It doesn't matter. You should be able to adjust and run that offense efficiently. And sometimes it looks like it's running efficiently, and then he gets in the red zone and completely shuts down. And it just frustrates me to no end. And I know it frustrates everybody else, too. We're confusing. We have Najee freaking Harris in the backfield. Why are you not running the ball at any point within those 4 downs with Najee Harris?
Yeah, I think that's probably where you notice the shortcomings the most, and he just looks so overmatched as an offensive coordinator. He has nothing. He has no answer for how to beat an NFL defense in the red zone. He just cannot scheme it up. And I understand, you know, some of that is probably personnel issues when you have the offensive line the Steelers do. It's not as simple as just saying, hand the ball to Najee Harris. But when you are less than 5 yards away from the goal line and you have a guy that literally every time he touches the ball falls forward for 2 or 3, you got to give it a shot or 2 or 3 at times, especially in situations where you're going forward on 4th down, as we saw with like the Freiermuth play, which was god awful. Anytime that Najee runs out and lines up out wide and you see Freiermuth come across the formation, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, that play, they might as well have said, hey, this is what we're running if you guys want to try to stop it. So, yeah, I think that Matt Canada, you know, what we were expecting listen, like he didn't invent the jet sweep. He didn't invent all this motion. Like it's something that is coming into the NFL and it has for a while now. And hey, it's great that he implements it, but that stuff does not make him some offensive guru genius. I do not think that he belongs in the NFL, at least not right now. I think that it was way too early for him to become an offensive coordinator. I think that this has always been my biggest issue. I love Mike Tomlin as a head coach. I've always really struggled to understand the people that they put beneath him in terms of the coordinators. And when you're talking about a defensive first guy in Tomlin, I think it is absolutely imperative that you have one of these new modern day NFL offensive coordinators. And I don't think that the Steelers have one.
No, I don't either. And I was explaining to a couple of people I was watching the game with that if you watch Matt Canada's offense, and I related it to the 2016 Pitt offense, the reason that offense works so well and why what the ideal scenario for a Matt Canada offense would be is that Nathan Peterman in 2016 was a mobile enough quarterback that the whole key for those jet sweeps and all those motions that is that you never knew who was getting the ball or who was keeping it. He could hand it off to the jet sweep. He could hand it off to the running back behind them. He could keep it himself. He could throw it. There was just a lot more mystery behind who was going to get the ball. But in this case scenario, Ben's the quarterback. We know he's not keeping the ball. There was, except for that one play against the Lions last week, I believe, he kept the ball and tried to get a first down, but didn't get it. Or the Bears game. Yeah. That was very un-Ben-like. I don't know where that came from. But that's the type of quarterback and that's the type of offense that Matt Canada would succeed in. He does not have that. And I feel like as much blame as I want to put on Matt Canada, and there's a ton of blame on it, you mentioned Mike Tomlin and what's the coordinators under him have done. How much of this blame can go on Mike Tomlin himself because he's the one hiring these coordinators. And it's not just one coordinator. We've seen it with multiple coordinators, especially offensively in a row where they just don't work out.
Yeah. I mean, Tomlin, Colbert, Rooney, like, I don't know who's, you know, it ultimately falls on, but I'm just, man, these internal hires, like, I don't know if it's just an unwillingness to go out and spend money on offensive coordinators or what, or coordinators in general or what, but it's not cutting it, you know, something has to change there. So I don't think, and listen to your point with like Matt Canada's ideal offense, what I've said time and time again to counter that though, is you can't like bring a guy in that needs a specific type of or specific personnel for his offense to succeed. His job as an offensive coordinator is to get the most out of the personnel that he has. He can't fit a square peg into a round hole. This is what you have at your disposal. Make it work.
Yeah, that's why I said he's not an NFL coordinator. He's just not. You have to be able to adjust with what you have. And it's not going to get any better moving forward because for the rest of the season, the Steelers have the toughest strength of schedule remaining for the NFL.
Yeah, it's nice to see that Kansas City's kind of found their legs. That's great to see.
Yeah, it's great. So we've got the Bengals, Ravens, Vikings, who beat Green Bay today, Titans, Chiefs, Browns, and Ravens again.
The Titans, though, they might be on the downswing. Also, I don't know if I said this on here last week or if it was just on Platt's picks, but I think the Raiders are falling off, and it was only a matter of time. With everything that's happened in that organization, I feel so bad for Derek Carr. He's just surrounded by a fire that's constantly going on, and he's just in the middle of it.
But yep. It's not going to get any easier for him or the Steelers or anything else.
The Steelers are currently now out of the playoff picture following this game with the Chargers jumping into a playoff spot. So right now, Titans at 8-3 hold the one seed. Ravens 7-3 lead the North and have the two seed. Patriots 7-4. That's crazy. They've now jumped the Bills and lead the AFC East. The Chiefs, after all that, still back in first place following a 4-game win streak. They are the four seed leading the West. And then Cincinnati, LA, and Buffalo currently hold the wild cards. The Steelers are the first team out, but also the Colts are coming. And I am not a believer in Baker Mayfield, but I still think the Browns are going to hang around.
Dude, it's crazy. You had a tweet yesterday morning, and it was like, if you knew who the best team in the NFL was, or you thought you knew, you actually don't. And it's so true, at least, especially in the AFC, it's so wide open this year. You have no idea who's going to be the best team week in and week out. Like predicting a playoff picture right now with only 7 weeks left, you have no idea.
That's the thing. Everything that the Steelers could potentially achieve is still in front of them. Really good news. We're bad news, depending on how it goes. These divisional games that haven't been happening, seems like why have the Steelers only played two games in the division? We got Cincinnati and Baltimore the next 2 weeks. So buckle up. AFC North football is right around the corner. And for this show, some good hockey talk is right around the corner, because the Penguins actually had a pretty solid week, and we're going to talk about it. Tristan Jarry, specifically, really good this past week, riding a shutout streak right now as well. So we're going to talk about him and the rest of the Penguins. Highlight the penalty kill a little bit, too. Talk about everything that's good going on in Pittsburgh right now. Anyways, we're going to talk about the Pens when we come back. This is Around the 412 on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. Welcome back to Around the 412 on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. I'm Smitty. That is Tyler. Let's wrap up the show talking about the Pens, because a lot happier times, I feel like, than the last episode. We were just coming off that brutal loss to the Capitals, 6-1, and it was very lethargic talk on here, if you will. We were all doom and gloom when it comes to the Pens. Crosby had a rough start to his season coming back, obviously only playing one game post-wrist surgery, then he's out with COVID. This stretch of hockey that they've played over this past week, though, starting with, I think, really the third period in that Buffalo game, carrying over to the next two games against the Canadiens with dominant performance, and then a really good game from Tristan Jarry, the penalty kill. There was at times where the offense looked lifeless in this game against the Maple Leafs, but really the defense and Tristan Jarry told the story. A much better week for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and primarily, let's just start by talking about Tristan Jarry.
Yeah, I mean, he's been great. He's been everything that we thought he wasn't going to be going into this season. The whole summer we were talking about how we needed to find goaltending help. We needed someone to at least be a 1A to or a 1B to Jarry's 1A if they're going to roll with Tristan Jarry as a starting goaltender going into the season. And he's just shut everybody up. I mean, this is a guy that came off one of the worst goaltending performances I've ever seen in a Pittsburgh uniform in that Islanders series this offseason. And he's completely flipped it around, in my opinion. I know we still joke about the shootout problems that he has, and it's clear as day that that's just not his little forte. But I think overall, as a goalie performance in actual games and not a skills competition, he's been really, really solid. And he's the reason that the Penguins are not in the hole, or a deeper hole that they would have been so far this season. I mean, the team in front of him has not played well in a number of these games, and he's been at least good enough to get them to certain overtimes and like shootouts. Like I mentioned, he's kept them in these games at which they needed him to, with all the guys that the Penguins have been missing so far. He's had a stellar start to the season that nobody in their right minds thought they would be having.
Yeah, he hasn't given up a goal since that second period against Buffalo on Tuesday night, last Tuesday. So since then, you know, he's on a little bit of a shutout streak now. I don't want to jinx him, but I'm assuming the next time we talk, that's probably going to end. But hey, who knows? Maybe he's just going to force four more games without giving up a goal. But yeah, he's been fantastic. And like I said, I mean, really magnified when they're killing penalties. I mean, they had to kill a 5-on-3 for nearly 2 minutes against Toronto. Think about how much talent they can throw out there on their power play too. Yep. And it wasn't like the Leafs, you know, the Pens PK, you know, I think you have to give them some credit for sure, but it's not like Toronto was spending a lot of time in the zone. The first power play that they had yesterday was nearly 2 minutes, or I'm sorry, Saturday night was nearly 2 minutes in the zone, the entire thing. So Tristan Jarry has been fantastic. The goalie problems have really been about what's behind Tristan Jarry and Casey DeSmith, because he has not provided that, really that backup role for the Pens at all. He's not taking any of the workload off of Tristan Jarry right now. Like Mike Sullivan, it's pretty clear, does not have the confidence to turn to him other than in literally back-to-back situations. That's the only time that we're going to see Casey DeSmith. So you just wonder, what's it going to take for them to maybe go out and address goaltending, not because of Tristan Jarry, but because of Casey DeSmith behind him.
Yeah, he's been a huge disappointment. And this is a guy that I've mentioned on the show before. I raved about a ton. I even said that I would protect him in the expansion draft over a guy like Tristan Jarry, just because I thought he was more valuable as a backup than Tristan Jarry was as a starter. Well, I look like an idiot. That's completely flip-flopped. And Tristan Jarry looks way more valuable as a starter than Casey DeSmith does, even as the Penguins backup. I mean, at a certain point, you wonder what are the Penguins going to do in these back-to-back situations when they would want to give Tristan Jarry a rest? You could, because if we're going to just keep getting losses every single time Casey DeSmith goes out there because he's not performing well enough, the state that the Penguins are in and where they are in the standing so far, I know it's still early, but you can't just depend on this guy to just not perform up to stuff. And they've lost like every single game he's played. You can't do that as a backup goalie. And I think that the league is trending in a way where it's like there's less and less just starting goalie and backup goalie. It's a lot of 1As and 1Bs when it comes to the goalie situation. There's more splitting time. And if they get into a situation where it's like, okay, Tristan Jarry's been handling the team enough, but we need to give him some sort of a rest. Right now, they can't rely on Casey DeSmith to spell Tristan Jarry and to give him a breather. They can't do that. He's not performing well enough. So maybe you do see Lou Demingue. Maybe by the trade deadline, they do bring in a different goalie. I don't know. Maybe the trade for a goalie or a signing of a goalie comes later in the season as opposed to this past offseason that we thought it was going to happen. And it came to replace the other goalie that we didn't think it was going to be for replacing. Maybe so. But as you mentioned before with Tristan Jarry, the thing that's been great with him is on the penalty kill. Not just him, though. The penalty kill in general, I just wanted to touch on. They're number one in the league now at 89.13%. So as bad as the power play has been, at least on the other side of the special teams for this Pittsburgh Penguins team, we have the best penalty kill in the league right now.
Teddy Bluger, Zach Aston, Reese, Brock McGinn has been huge for the penalty kill too, coming over. You know, he's been a nice addition. I mean, he even looks offensively like he's a guy that could score double digit goals, which is really all you can ask for guys playing your third, fourth line. So, yeah, I mean, the penalty kill is definitely doing, and it's good to see Brian Dumoulin have his best game of the season, too, I thought, against Toronto on Saturday night as well. Kind of, you know, let's transition a little bit, because I know that they didn't have a great offensive performance in this game against Toronto, but you look back at the last couple games, Jake Gensel's finally starting to get it going. He's got goals in four straight, and that's kind of what you expect to see. Now, he also has kind of like kickstarted Sid as well, which, you know, the way that those two feed off each other, so it was only a matter of time.
Yeah, I think that was important for both of those guys to get going. And now Sid hasn't played a ton of games, so he might have a little rust on him, but you wouldn't expect too much. He's Sidney freaking Crosby. But Jake Gensel, he needed Sid to get back. I mean, you and I both say, like, Jake Gensel is a great player outside of Sidney Crosby. No matter what, he could play with whoever. He's still going to be a great player. But it's not going to be the same Jake Gensel that you're going to get with Sidney Crosby. I mean, it's just a little different when they're both together.
Yeah, so he didn't have Gino either. You know, if you're not going to have Sid, you at least hope that he's got Gino to play with. He didn't have either one.
Yeah, so the fact that Sid comes back and he's playing well, that was great for him and great for both of them, because it looked early on in the season like the team as itself was not needing a one or two lines to carry it. But as the season went on, we noticed that they're not getting scoring from the depth of this team. And now that this first line is back, they still got that second line rolling. I think that it's just more relaxing as a team itself to see that first line, seeing Sid on it, seeing Jake start to score more. And I feel like that will help feed the other lines itself, knowing that they can have that line to also rely on.
Yeah, and you know, we haven't seen Brian Boyer or Drew O'Connor, who were two guys that were, you know, had decent starts to the season. I think that this speaks to the depth that we have. I mean, really, like, you look at the lineup right now, they're rolling with Dom Simone as kind of like that 12th forward. He's kind of won that competition for the time being over Boyle and O'Connor. Me personally, I don't have a problem with Dom Simone being the guy in there. You know how we are, but I would love to see Drew O'Connor be the guy on that fourth line playing with Rodriguez and Heinen. I just think that they would offer more. I guess they're technically the third line because they showed Bluter's the fourth line, but that's neither here nor there when you're talking about this. I would love to see O'Connor as the 12th forward, but I just think he can provide a little bit more offense. I guess. Really, to me, though, the only disappointing guy amongst the forwards, I know he's got four goals now. He had a hat trick in one game. Kasperi Kapanen, in my opinion, has probably been the Pens' worst forward. I don't know what's going on with him. He even spoke. I got to give him credit for speaking honestly about it, but how he's just not always engaged at times. You know, if things aren't going right for him, he kind of just becomes disengaged with the game. And you don't want to necessarily hear him say that. I guess I can respect the honesty of it. But, you know, to hear a player say that is kind of alarming. You know, how do you keep a guy engaged, I guess? Because I thought at times him, Zucker, and Carter have looked pretty good together.
Yeah, I have too. And I thought that even though he wasn't scoring in the early on games, I thought that he was still playing well. He was still generating chances and he was still, like, giving his best effort. It was just a lot of bad puck luck. But really, since that hat trick game, I think he's had what just the one goal since then. And besides that, I don't know how you would keep any player engaged. I feel like that's more so on the player. No matter what, even if you're not scoring, you just have to keep going. I don't really think that's something that people can bring out of him. I think that's more internal. Like, you just have to keep yourself engaged and keep yourself in the game and keep that motor going. And if that's something that he's dealing with, then that's something that he has to figure out quickly, because we can't. This is a guy that we're expecting to rely on for offensive points, and he hasn't been doing that. He has four goals and seven assists, which, I mean, isn't terrible, but we're expecting more from this guy, especially as a top six winger.
The numbers on the surface don't look bad. I mean, he's second on the team in points right now with Evan Rodriguez. Jake Gensel was 14, Kapanen and Rodriguez both with 11. But, you know, you got to look past that and you watch him play. And again, he has the puck on his stick a lot. So, like, at least, you know, the confidence from that standpoint is there. But he's just doing a lot of nothing with it. He's just skating around a lot. And again, I don't know, for lack of a better word, I just keep going back to, he doesn't seem engaged with what's going on. Like, Zucker and Carter, I feel like, have found pretty solid chemistry. I'm curious as to how things shake out when Gino gets back. I assume that we're going to see Gino with Cap and then Carter with Zucker, and then they figure out the other guys that's playing with each of those two.
Yeah, and maybe that's the case. Maybe they stick Zucker with Jeff Carter on that third line, and then they find a different winger with Malkin and Kapanen. Yeah, true, because we saw the chemistry that Malkin and Kapanen had for that little while when they were both healthy. Was that last year? I don't know. Mm-hmm. These COVID seasons confuse me as to when hockey was played. But we saw the chemistry that those two players have. So maybe that's the reason that Kapanen doesn't really have the same focus that he's had or the same drive that he's had. It's just, like, he doesn't mesh well with Carter and Zucker together, like, that as a line. So maybe when Malkin comes back, that's completely different, and we could see a completely different Kapanen, the Kapanen that we saw last season. And then maybe they could spread the wealth out throughout the lines, move Jeff Carter and Jason Zucker down, and you've got multiple lines that have good chemistry pairings together.
Last thing that I want to ask you about, and it's kind of referring back to the Pens teams of the last couple of years, specifically one line. What do you make of the Bluder Aston Reese McGinn line as opposed to the Bluder Aston Reese Tanev line that we had fallen in love with over the last couple of seasons?
I think they're fairly similar. I think they're both responsible defensively, which is, I think, their first objective is to be the shutdown line, create no offense for the other team when they're on the ice. But I think that McGinn has, now obviously he doesn't have the speed that Tanev had. I don't think anybody does on the team, but I think that McGinn might have a little more offensive upside than Tanev had, which I think is helping that line as well. And I think that it's similar to the Tanev line, but a little bit different. I think they're more offensively productive with McGinn on that line. Maybe they're better defensively with Tanev, but I still think they've been pretty solid so far. I'm sure Danny could break down the numbers for us on that one, but I've been pleased with that line. It's basically like we got rid of Tanev and replaced him with a different Tanev that's a little bit slower but more offensive.
Yeah, I'm definitely not objecting to that point, because I definitely think by the time the season is over that will be the case. Tanev has seven goals already this year, though, which is kind of wild. I think two of those are empty netters, but still, it's pretty crazy to see him up to seven goals, which is like one below Eberle for the team lead or something there. So he's off to a pretty decent offensive start, but I definitely agree with your point in general, because I said the same thing. Like, I thought McGinn would come here and provide a little bit more of an offensive boost to that line while keeping them as a shutdown defensive group for the Pens. Now,
Tanev is also playing with Yanni Gord and Jonas Donskoy, who are, I think, more offensive than Bluger and Zach Aston-Reese.
And that's the thing. I'd be interested to see what that line has done defensively. You know, has he taken a step back, his defensive numbers, not playing with Bluger and Zach Aston-Reese? Because I think, you know, to us, Bluger's the center, right? But Zach Aston-Reese is really, from a defensive standpoint, the straw that stirs that drink as far as why they're so good defensively. But, you know, even Teddy Bluger, we're talking about offense. These guys provide more offense. He's got 5 goals this year. That line already, those two have combined for 9. Like, I don't think that through this number of games, anybody thought that that would be the case for that group.
No, I don't think so as well. And I think that that proves, that goes to show how, like, offensive I think this that line can be. And I think that it's tough to compare Tanev's numbers right now to, like, what he would have been on the Penguins. Like, there's right. I honestly don't know, but if I'm a betting man, I'm betting that he does not have 7 goals if he's on the Penguins right now. And maybe that's just the play style. Maybe that's the line that he's on. I just don't think that's the case. But the fact that Bluger and Zach Aston-Reese, that whole line has been as good as they have been so far, I think it's really it's really good to see that, because we were questioning, why are you getting – this offseason was so confusing for me. Especially because it's like we lost Jared McCann to lose Brandon Tanev when you didn't need to lose either of them, or at least lose one of them. But if you're going to lose them, how are we going to replace that? And I think that Brock McGinn has done a good enough job. Friend of the show, by the way, he's been on our show. I think he's done a good enough job, and I think that line's been productive. And I think that's one of the lines that we've been able to count on for the majority of the season.
Tanev's got to be due for something. He's shooting 20% right now, by the way. This is like William Karlsson first year in Vegas, what he's got going on right now. There's no way that continues. So, listen, I love Brandon Tanev.
I don't know what the underlying numbers are. I mean, his Corsi 4 percentage is 50.6, which is still solid, but I don't know what the actual, like, advanced numbers are for him. I can't really find that easily very quickly. But still,
people in our comments saying that doesn't matter anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, last year he shot 16.3, but then you go back to, like, the year before that, 11, he's, like, doubled his shooting percentage. It's got to come down.
Yeah, and again, I believe that a couple of those are empty netters. But, hey, that's where I want to leave off, because I want you guys to answer that for us. What do you guys think about this new shutdown line that the Pens have in McGinn, Bluger, and Aston-Reese, as opposed to the last couple of years with Tanev, Bluger, and Aston-Reese? Let us know in the comments your thoughts comparing those two, or on Twitter, because this is going to be our teaser clip, of course, since we're asking you guys a question, want you guys to get involved. Other than that, real quick, I got to bring up, obviously, Rocking Around the 412, because we have a little bit of an announcement to go along with that. By the time that you guys are watching / listening to this, hopefully more information is out on there. We've already hit... and thank you to you guys so much. We've already hit the total donations that we had from last year, this year. However, I did set a goal of 7,500. I am very set on making that happen. And to help get even more donations, we are calling in some reinforcements. We're going to do a live show with the Yinzers. Shout out to Jordan, Morgan, and Sam. They're going to join a live show with us. And I got some more stuff from Pristine Auction coming in. And we're going to do, like, a live auction show. So you guys are going to bid on the items. Once you pay for them, we move on to the next item. It's that simple. So, yeah, the Yinzers are going to join us for a live show for that. If this is your first time ever hearing about Rock Around the 412, go to our Twitter at Around the 412. It's our pinned tweet. You can go to the GoFundMe right there, read the whole mission, share it, donate if you can. Every single penny goes to the families in the area to help provide Christmas in its entirety. Literally in its entirety, including getting the family a gift card to go into groceries to be able to provide that holiday meal. So good stuff there. Of course, shout out to the Yinzers. Two thirds of them are actually were at the Chargers Steeler game in LA. So,
and that same 2/3 are going to be dyeing their hair because we have 5,000 for Rocker.
True, I forgot to bring that up. I feel like I got to do something because, like, yeah, Sam and Morgan are dyeing their hair. I believe Chad is shaving his head, and I think Eddie's shaving his beard. Like, people,
listen, I'm down to do something. You just have to approve it with my fiance first.
There you go. And I don't have anything that I gotta run by anybody. So if you guys have an idea for me, let me know. But yeah, of course, you know, shout out to everybody that's donating, but definitely shout out to them as well for, you know, wanting to help the cause to the extent that they're willing to do things like that just to make sure that we hit our goals. So just a bunch of love in the Pittsburgh podcasting community. So be sure to check out their shows as well, because they're on the DK Pittsburgh Sports podcast network as well. So subscribe to the channel, leave us a like, leave us a comment, of course, answering the question that we just asked you guys. Other than that, for Smitty, for Tyler, this has been Around the 412 on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network, and we will talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.